Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TIC-FM and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by Dr. George Cushell and Dr. Richard Fortinsky from the UConn Center on Aging. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Aaron.
Well, good morning, Aaron.
Tell us about the UConn Center on Aging. How long have you been around, and what do you do?
We've both been around for a little over 20 years now, and I'm a physician. I'm a geriatrician and gerontologist. Geriatrician is a physician who has expertise in clinical care of older adults. Gerontologist is somebody who studies aging. And I'll let Dr. Fortinsky introduce himself.
Sure. My background is in sociology. And so the research I do is focused often on behavioral issues involving older adults, as well as social issues. So Dr. Cushell and I complement each other in terms of our scientific backgrounds.
Talk about the genesis of the center. How did it come to be?
So actually, the genesis of the center preceded to some extent the arrival of both of us in Connecticut, and occurred in the mid-1980s, and actually involved the Travelers Insurance Company, which has named actually the chair that I currently hold, the Traveler's Chair in Geriatrics and Gerontology, and came about through the vision back then that issues having to do with aging and older adults were likely to become very important in the coming decades. And there was a need for a multidisciplinary center. There's a center that would bring together people from many different backgrounds, different disciplines, different professional backgrounds to work together to help address issues of older adults, help improve quality of aging from the clinical perspective, in terms of teaching, and of course, in terms of research. And that vision, of course, turned to be absolutely correct. And we wouldn't be here today without that.
Talk about some of your research areas. And I know that you recently won a $7 million grant from the National Institutes of Health. We're going to get there in a second, but just broadly, talk about some of the areas that you research and teach in.
Well, I'll begin by discussing it in a more broader sense, because what brings together everyone in the UConn Center on Aging is a commitment to improving health and independence and quality of life in late life. Really, everything having to do with adding life to years, rather than necessarily just adding years to life. And so everything we do is very much a team-based multidisciplinary science involving many different disciplines. And the areas in which the UConn Center on Aging is particularly active has to do with four major domains, if you will, having to do with health and independence in late life. One has to do with maintaining mobility and preventing falls. Another one has to do with host defense, obviously a very important topic right now, given the COVID pandemic and fending off infection. Third area has to do with memory and behavioral issues, incredibly important given all the concerns about dementia and Alzheimer's disease specifically. And the fourth has to do with voiding and bladder control. So it's kind of the four general areas that we work collectively addressing them from the perspective of basic wet bench science, laboratory science, as well as research involving clinical research involving older adults, as well as research that takes place out in the community.
I would just add that the focus of the work that I do is mostly in the community. So we have been involved in several studies where we have visited the homes of many Connecticut citizens who have joined our studies to learn more about their health and how we might be able to help them through programs that we introduce in the home. So the community really is our laboratory for some of the work that we do, in addition to the campus-based bench laboratory that really speaks more to the biology of aging. So that's one of the really unique features about the UConn Center on Aging, is that we have faculty investigators and other trainees who really span the whole spectrum of aging research, from discovery in the laboratory all the way to implementing services to help older adults and their families who are living every day in the community throughout Connecticut and elsewhere.
Now, the Center on Aging has just been awarded a $7 million NIH grant. Tell us what that money is going to be used for and how it will support your work.
So basically, this is it's called a Claude Pepper Center, Older Americans Independence Center. It's named after Claude Pepper, who was a congressman and later senator from Florida in the 1970s and 80s. And it's funded by National Institute on Aging, and it's really a center of excellence type of program designed specifically to support the best centers in the country that work towards research that helps come up with new ways of maintaining independence, of promoting and maintaining independence in late life. And then, so it's highly competitive. There are only 15 such centers in the country, and it's a 5-year award. We're humbled and very excited to begin the work. The grant only just began a couple of weeks ago, last month. I'll let my colleague dive a little bit into the details of how the grant is structured and what it will do. But it's really an incredible vehicle for us. First of all, it's a wonderful recognition from colleagues elsewhere of who we are and where we are and what we've accomplished. But secondly, much more important than the dollar figure is what it will provide in terms of infrastructure, and to propel us towards really the next step of what we need to do in terms of moving forward and really transforming our university and transforming our surrounding communities in a way that will allow us to really be even more leaders in this type of research and make an impact on our community. So I'll let Rick to kind of dive a little bit into the details of what the grant will actually do.
Sure. Thanks, George. One of the things that the Pepper Center is funded to do is to provide pilot study funding for investigators who have ideas that are novel and that really could help move our knowledge forward about how to improve healthy aging. So we actually fund a variety of pilot studies, which we could not do without the funding from the Pepper Center. And again, these can be pilot studies for any kind of science, ranging from basic biology all the way to community-based studies. Secondly, there's funding to select what we call Pepper Scholars, which are usually junior level faculty, early career faculty members who want to get into the field of aging, and this could really jumpstart them. So there's actually funding to cover a portion of their salary, and also to provide other resources that would help them begin to do some preliminary work in their area of interest. So the way the Pepper Center is set up is we have competitions each year in the 5 years to select pilot studies and also to select Pepper Scholars. And the whole idea really is that everybody who's been at the Center on Aging has an established research track record, but now we're going to open up this opportunity to all investigators, any investigators throughout the University of Connecticut community. In so doing, what we want to do is expand the number of people who become skilled in doing research in the field of aging throughout the University of Connecticut, along with our partner, Jackson Laboratory for Genomic Medicine. So it really does provide resources, the Pepper Center does, to greatly expand the number of people who get involved in doing research to try to improve independence for older adults in the community.
How closely linked is this to the idea of aging in place, where, you know, older people are able to live independently as opposed to, say, in a nursing home?
That's an excellent question, Aaron. There are many, many older adults living in Connecticut and elsewhere who may have some level of chronic illness and disability and who really want to stay at home. And many of the research initiatives that we have had at the Center on Aging and that we expect will continue through the Pepper Center is trying to figure out how to be able to keep them aging in place, but not just aging in place, but aging in place at an optimal level of health and well-being. And so that's really one of the real features of the work that we do, is that we really do try to find ways to keep older adults who are living in the community, even if they have some level of disability, to be able to keep living in their homes, which is really what aging in place is all about. So, George, if you want to add to that.
No, absolutely. I mean, that is one of the ways that research programs such as this have an impact, both in terms of understanding what the needs of older adults in the community are, but also to come up with innovative ways of following people and maintaining people in the community, all of which became so much more timely and essential given the COVID-19 pandemic in terms of taking care of our patients. As many of your listeners will know, we've had to switch health systems and health providers had to switch to doing a lot of face-to-face visits. All of a sudden changed to visits either by phone or over the computer. And similarly, on the research side, both Dr. Pratinsky and I are involved and have been involved in a number of studies where we had to change gears and come up with innovative ways of following people in their homes and wherever they may be, given the pandemic. So the good side out of this is we actually learned quite a bit from this experience, as difficult as it was for everyone in terms of how to do this better. But in terms of the Pepper Center, that is absolutely one of the foci. And again, to come back to what Rick said, I think that, you know, one of our strengths that we're particularly proud of is the fact that our research within one group, within one center, really does span the full spectrum of going from basic laboratory science to clinical human subject research, all the way into people's homes. And that's quite unusual. If you go around the country, you'll find places where each of those components may or may not be done, sometimes done very well. But it's the fact that what's quite unique about what we do is that all of this is done in a coordinated fashion together, and then we can bring those disciplines and approaches together. And I think that is part of the reason that we've had such nice successes in recent years.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. He is Dr. George Cushell, joined by Dr. Richard Fortinsky, both from the UConn Center on Aging. They recently were awarded a $7 million NIH grant to support the Older Adults Initiative. People might think that, you know, aging is kind of one size fits all, but the more you research, I suspect that couldn't be further from the truth.
That's absolutely correct. That's one of the misconceptions about aging. One of the most common stereotypes or ageisms, as some would say, is this idea that all older people are the same. And in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. And if you happen to be talking to a group of young people, say people in their 20s and 30s, as I often am when I speak to our medical students, you can actually tell them with confidence that they are as similar to each other at this moment as they ever will be. That as they grow older and as they grow into old age, they will get more and more different from each other, from every aspect you can imagine. At the end of the day, we're all still the same people that were born, but in terms of how, in terms of our health status, in terms of what diseases we have or do not have, in terms of how well we function, in terms of everyday activities, it varies tremendously. And the trajectories of aging, the path that we take in aging, not just how long we age, but how well we age, how well we function, varies tremendously. Many people use the word variability to refer to this. Others refer talk of heterogeneity, but this is something that we've all become very passionate about, and something that we very much wish to address in a more thoughtful, more scientific way through this Pepper Center grant.
Yeah, and another way in which people are very different, of course, is through racial and ethnic diversity in the population. And I think it's important to recognize that even in the older population, the degree of racial and ethnic diversity continues to grow and grow. So we are really focused on, particularly through the Pepper Center now, in reaching out to communities of color throughout Connecticut to be able to hopefully attract them to join our studies, really to help us improve our knowledge about their health and well-being and what independent living means to them. So we really are excited about the opportunity to engage with individuals throughout the racial and ethnic communities in Connecticut. And we are partnering with the UConn Health Disparities Institute as part of our Pepper Center. And we're also assembling a community advisory board to help us do a better job of explaining the kind of work that we plan to do to different communities throughout the state of Connecticut, so that we really can tap into the great diversity that there is in the state of Connecticut.
If someone hears this and wants to participate in a research project, how should they reach out to you?
So and there are a number of ways. You may see advertisements, and we have occasional advertisements in newspapers and the media where we talk about studies that are ongoing. They can come and look at our website at UCHC.edu under the Center on Aging, and they can also call us at 679-3956 if they want to know what studies are currently recruiting. At any given time, we have a dozen or more studies that are actively recruiting for any number of issues aligned with the kinds of problems that I discussed, aligned with studies to help improve mobility. For example, after hip fractures, one category of studies that we're involved in, helping older women improve function after hip fracture, to studies involving with coming up with better, more effective influenza vaccination in older adults. But, you know, it's so important, a number of COVID-related studies where, as you know, aging is one of the major risk factors of developing severe COVID. All the way to studies having to do with behavioral issues, memory, and depression. So it's a very broad range of studies, and we're always happy to talk to people from the community, both about research studies or their interests in advising us how we can do a better job along the lines that Rick Vertinsky mentioned.
I'm curious if, in your research, have you found that there are some reliable indicators of whether or not someone is able to live on their own and maintain a high degree of independence versus needing more help in, say, a skilled nursing facility?
Well, that's obviously an incredibly important question. And in fact, there are some tools. There are tools that clinicians use not just physicians, but nurses and social workers and others use in determining who is likely to need help or who needs help right now. And what it comes down to is really ability to take care of yourself safely in terms of mobility, the ability to walk safely, the ability to take one's pills and to remember to do things, all the way to things like ability to remain continent. All of these are incredibly important determinants, and it's not just one factor, but it's all of these. So that is an area that really is at the core of what we're interested in, and understanding using that information to come up with better understanding of this variability between individuals. We all know, all of us know, individuals in their 80s and 90s who are incredibly robust and aging remarkably well, who who to this day continue in their 80s to participate in marathons and ski downhill. We all know individuals like that. And at the same time, we unfortunately know individuals who for one reason or another, or multitudes of reasons, can't manage alone and need some kind of help at home, or need to be in some kind of institution. And the reason we're so passionate about this issue of variability between individuals, heterogeneity with aging, is not only because it's interesting to us, but much more importantly, because by understanding it better, we can come up with better interventions that are better matched, that are better suited for the individual that we're dealing with. That, you know, our interest is not treating the average person. Our interest in treating the individual who is in front of us, the individual that we're dealing with, because of these differences.
And I'd like to just build on that a bit, Aaron. In addition to focusing on the individual older adult, as Dr. Cushell was talking about, it's incredibly important to get a good sense of their family support system, which gets at your question of who might be able to continue living at home versus maybe not. If two older adults were of similar health and well-being, and one older adult had a family that was, first of all, available, or, you know, even one member of the family, and secondly, willing and able to help them out, then the latter person, the one with a family support, is more likely to be able to remain aging in place. So a lot of the research that we do, and this is a particular area that I myself do, is in trying to strengthen the family's reserve and resolve to teach them how to take care of their older relatives who might have some degree of either cognitive impairment or physical disability or both, again, in the home setting, because it's very, very important to make sure that the family is well supported, because in most cases, not only do older adults want to stay at home, but their families want them to stay at home as well. But sometimes families don't have the resources or the knowledge about the medical problems and other types of conditions that their older relative has for them to be able to continue to do that. So along with doing a detailed assessment, either in the clinical or research setting of older adults, it's really important to do a thoughtful assessment of the family's ability to care and, you know, what gaps in skills and knowledge do they have, and to make sure they take care of themselves as well, because it's often as important for family members who are responsible for caring for older adults to keep their own health as it is for the older adults to keep their health as well. Because if the family support system breaks down, that could really have adverse consequences for the older adults they're taking care of.
Dr. Cushell, in our final minute or so, I'm just curious how things have been for you as a clinician during the pandemic working with older patients.
Well, as I alluded to earlier, it has been a challenge, but we actually learned a lot from it. I mean, I think that, in my view, the healthcare system in some ways is actually stronger as a result of COVID, because we've learned that a lot can be done remotely. You don't have to do everything in person. And of course, we still seeing patients in person, face to face, is the bread and butter, the core of what we do. But we've learned that a lot can be done remotely, and we were actually also doing research to see where, for example, consultative care. One of our colleagues, Dr. Patrick Cole, is very interested in the question whether there can be things done in the nursing home setting remotely and without having to bring people by ambulance to the health facility. So it's we've learned a lot, but it has certainly been an extremely challenging time, particularly for older adults who've been so affected by this pandemic and their families, but I think in many ways we will be coming out of this even stronger.
He is Dr. George Cushell, joined by Dr. Richard Fortinsky, both from the UConn Center on Aging. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us. A pleasure, Aaron.
And thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.